You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How much did you want to do this album?
How much did I want to do? This much. Was it this much? I mean, yeah, I was there. I did it. You know what I mean? It was. I was really looking forward to doing it. I mean, the fact it was really a bit long in the making and wasn't always that great fun. But, I mean, I think the actual album is really good.
How hard was it to do the album?
I think it was quite hard because we spent longer getting into it this time, didn't we? Sort of playing again, because we haven't played for 4 years.
Right.
But it was fun getting our chops back together again.
It usually takes, like, 10 days, 2 weeks to sort of get back into it, and it took about a month, didn't it, really, this time? That was the only thing. It just took
to get warmed up. Get over the novelty of the clubs and things and finally get down to the studio. It took about a month, yeah.
Comes in, right? Yeah. Strums out his tune, yeah? Yeah? And I said, that's the number one record.
Listen, I promise you that those of us in this room like each other a lot more than that version of the Rolling Stones being interviewed by somebody on the BBC in 1986.
The
very, very, very sad promotional tour. Very limited.
The only tour they did for this album.
Yeah.
How much do I like it? This much. This much.
This match. Yeah.
By the way, just for you stoppies out there, Mick Jagger was bringing his hands apart to show how much he liked making the record.
But it was not the full length that he could with his arms.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't his full wingspan.
Yeah. No.
We know he has quite a mouth span.
You like this album?
A lifespan.
Roughly 2.5 to 3 feet. This much to this much difference in his answer.
All right. So, stoppies, it's time for us to take on another hero, the Rolling Stones. We're not having enough fun soliciting those one-star ratings. We want to piss off every dad in Massachusetts and beyond by making fun. Actually, I did. My dad was upset.
About what? The Tool episode?
Yeah.
Oh.
My dad had some, had some things to say. He's a fan of Tool. I'm sure he didn't listen to the episode. I was like, maybe you should try listening to all the funny things that we said.
Yeah.
People think that we're funny. We got a message from somebody in Pennsylvania who was quoting the episode. Yeah. Shouts out to you, ill-omened 666.
Shout out to all my Pennsylvania stoppies, you.
Yeah. Yo, shut up. That's offensive. We lost him. We lost him. There it goes.
I'll take you the Wawa.
All right, enough. I'm sorry, ill-omened.
This album is Broken Mike.
Who are we? What's the name of the show? Where are we? I love it this much.
You're listening to Make It Stop, Bad Music.
Good Times? How do you say that? British.
Good Times.
Good Times.
Good times. Good times.
Yeah, there you
good
go.
Good times. See, that's horrible.
It's just terrible.
I'm offending everybody.
You don't want to get the one-star reviews from our UK fans.
Oh.
Yeah. Our UK fans who love the Lulu episode. I've been looking at the geo data.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have been digging into the data, Mike. Give us a nice data report.
Yeah.
Done. Data contingency.
Here's the data report. Our Little Dickie episode is extremely popular in India.
Yeah, what is up? Indian Stompies.
They only listen to that one episode in India, but they listen to it a lot.
I mean, that's the only way to get Little Dickie's music over there.
Yeah.
They, like, never licensed it out to India.
Shout out Massachusetts, California, and New York. You guys comprise the vast majority of our listenership.
Thank you.
But, you know, you're all out there.
We appreciate you.
Across the globe.
Yeah, we love the fact that the Chris Gaines episode is so popular. We got to say thank you to Childish Gambino for putting us over on that one.
We did get a bump. We got a Childish Gambino bump.
We're grateful for that. And what's the other one that's really popular?
Oh, I mean, above all else, it's Chris Gaines, Lulu, and Lil Dicky. Those are the top three episodes of all time.
A holy trinity.
Yeah. So if you haven't listened to them, you're missing out. Those are the ones that everyone is loving.
Yeah, the Stoppies are and we wanted to celebrate because we're late in doing this and we didn't do it on any of our other episodes that are going to come out before this. But thank you for getting us to over 10,000 downloads, yeah. Precious Stoppies.
And climbing, rapidly climbing.
Congrats.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. So we should probably
By the way, my name is Mike Dunn.
Oh, hello. And my name is Heather Mack. And we host the show. And we're doing a great job at it. We're a little out of practice. We got, you know.
It took us about a month to introduce our guest.
So we want to welcome our wonderful guest, preeminent wrestling, pro wrestling, and Rolling Stone scholar of the Boston area, Jer Palapal. Has been performing stand-up comedy for over half a decade. That's a long time, folks. Drawing from life stories and a mischievous perspective, Jer connects with audiences through an absurd and hilarious madness that his suits and ties cannot contain. Let it be known that he is, in fact, wearing a Harvard sweatshirt with the Unabomber screen printed onto it. So the suit and tie was left at home for us, and that's appropriate.
Shout out to Malin Pavletic for designing this sweatshirt that I wear all the time.
Wow. And you also came in correct with the Boston sports representation for the Boston Celtics.
The only sport I watch.
Absolutely. Well,
it isn't wrestling.
I was about to say. He has been playing all over the country and has been featured on NPR's Stories on Stage, the Geek Down podcast, and hosts the Wrestle Down podcast. And that's amazing because we're all super mega wrestling nerds, but not as much as you because we haven't dedicated a podcast to it. So Jer Palapal is here. Yay.
What up, Jer?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
We're doing great. Tell us about your wrestling podcast real quick. I want to make sure that all of our honest and faithful stoppies know. Do you talk about the Rolling Stones? Do you talk about music in the context of wrestling?
No, but that's not a bad idea. Our podcast does not have much of a gimmick. It's just two guys we've been friends with.
Funny for a wrestling podcast.
Yeah, I know, right?
Same.
Just me and my friend from college. We've been friends for 15 years now or something like that. So we've just got a good banter. We just talk about whatever wrestling we've watched and whatever is coming up and worth, checking out. I try to focus my energy on international stuff, and he's very much into keeping up with WWE and everything. So, you know, we got a good balance, and we're on the Geek Down Network with the same RSS feed as the Geek Down podcast.
Cool.
So, nice. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, love that podcast network flavor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lend that air of legitimacy to us, please, God.
Networked up.
Oh, there's no legitimacy. I recorded it in my studio bedroom, my studio apartment.
Listen.
This studio we're in, it's an illusion.
This is all a fantasy. So you are also a massive Rolling Stones
fan. Indeed, I am, yeah.
So tell us about that. What do you love most about the Stones, man?
I think I love them because... one, they've got so much music that you can dig into from, what's it, 40, 50, about 60 years or something like that. Yeah, it's a lot. And also, they're also deeply problematic, which...
Wait, brown sugar is problematic? What?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry, what? I didn't truly realize what that song was until somebody sang it at karaoke, and then there was no hiding.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
right?
Songs like my mother, a little racist, but I love it. But yeah, it's I like to think about music more than I do just, enjoy it in a way, you know?
Yeah.
They're just...
Same.
They make so many weird, dumb detours and so many odd sounds in what they do and so many things that have not aged well or whatever that, just trying to parse it through, my own lens is just interesting to me.
Oh.
Yeah. And they're, from just singing about like 13-year-old girls or whatever in 1968 is just, you know.
That was the style, though.
Yeah. That's just what they, it's what they were all doing. Yeah. It
who
is
they
bad.
Were all doing.
Yeah. We've discussed this before.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's a common topic.
I saw you did a Bowie episode.
Oh, we sure did. Yeah.
Yeah. There's certain things you got to overlook if you want to enjoy any rock music made before like 2005.
Yeah. Let's say like 2004 or 5. Yeah.
I mean, even then, Jesse Lacey. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a whole bunch of people. I mean, a good percentage of the stuff that we've discussed on this.
Yes.
On this podcast is deeply, deeply problematic. And that's what kind of makes it fun.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, I'm very excited. It sounds like you've really thought these things over. And I'm going to tell you that I am like not. I don't know. Like the Rolling Stones, I feel like I appreciate their like, you know, their place in rock and roll history. I like recognize them. As,
you
like,
never dug in deep on any Stones albums?
No, I didn't. Yeah. And I don't know why.
Is this the first Stones album you've listened to?
All the way through? Probably. That's kind of embarrassing. That's kind of fucked up. Like I don't know. For
no
some reason,
like
my parents had this weird thing where they were like not Beatles and not Stones. They liked the Kinks. Like they were like into the Kinks. And that
was cool.
No, honestly. Yeah. And so I grew up, I know a lot about the Kinks and I understand again the Beatles and the Rolling Stones place in history, but I haven't listened to
It's just weird
to
be like
I'm a fucking music critic. What the fuck is wrong with me?
It's weird to like be like fuck the Rolling Stones, but the Kink like the Kink there's not that many degrees
like
of separation.
Fuck the Rolling Stones. It was just like we were a Kinks family.
We were a Kinks family.
We were a Kinks
family of Kinks.
Yeah, yeah. When did you get into the Rolling Stones? And
I was probably like high school ish, and then like I would just like save up my money from my part-time job and just buy.
What was
CDs.
Your part-time job in high school? I feel in like it school? Says a lot about people.
I used to bag groceries.
Yeah.
Yeah, at Roach Brothers.
It's interesting because like I was like, okay, I need to get the Nelly album. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I was.
You know what it is? I was like, I would always get into an artist and then go back into like their influences. So I'm thinking that my like linealogy would have been getting into Black Crowes.
Okay.
Because they were a little bit more modern Stones.
Right.
And then getting into the Stones because of that. And then finding like 70 or so albums to, you know, dig into.
See, that's so cool. Yeah. You were like a true music critic. I was just like, I like this because it's loud.
I mean, that's how I feel now because there's so much to stream. Why would I, you know, do more than think, yeah, this is good. It's got, it kept me interested for 30 seconds. Cool.
Did you listen to Dirty Work in your youth? Was this something that you explored and experienced? And what was your thought on that?
Then it was just like, so for me, like if someone's like one of these great, like quote unquote great artists with like a bunch of music, like Bob Dylan or whatever, at some point I get tired of the stuff that's like everyone is already into. So I just get into the bad stuff.
You gotta dig deep.
Interesting.
Yeah. So like I'll listen at this point, I probably listen to like Bob Dylan's Christian shit more than
that's a future episode for sure. It's saved.
Yeah.
Right? Oh yeah, definitely.
I listen to that
future
stuff
episode.
Way more than like his 60s prime.
Really?
Yeah.
You know what I will say about Bob Dylan is that everyone shits on self-portrait for some reason.
Yeah.
But there's some bangers on self-portrait.
The bootleg series they did of that with all the outtakes is amazing.
Yeah.
He like just didn't know what he was doing at the time, I guess. Or he knew that and he didn't want to do good. I don't know. But yeah, that's how I feel about Dirty Work. It's just like an interesting little detour that they did at the peak of hating them each other.
Yeah, well, it was kind of the detour that almost broke the band up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what kind of makes it so interesting in like the lore of this band and honestly of rock and roll, because you know you can't deny that the Rolling Stones were you know foundational in what modern rock and roll is. You know,
what's your favorite Stones album?
Yeah, good question.
Let It Bleed.
Let It Bleed, classic.
Yeah, Let It Bleed is probably my favorite.
I like a little Beggar's Banquet. Yeah, I think.
That one's really good.
Yeah,
there are times when I like that one too, just because it's so folky.
I feel like I got into Rolling Stones a little piecemeal. Where like, because I saw Full Metal Jacket when I was in freshman year, and I was like, hell yeah, I love Paint It Black now.
Yeah,
I mean that's a great song.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah,
and then I think my dad had Sticky Fingers, so I started listening to Sticky Fingers.
Yep.
And then after that, after high school,
Paul Dunn.
Every few years I would be like, oh, I'll listen to this Rolling Stones album I never listened to and then like get into it for a couple weeks. But yeah. There's still some that I never even bothered with. Like, yeah.
They're pretty prolific. How many albums do they have?
It's like a shitload.
Yeah, it's like not. I mean, they've slowed down a ton now. So
right,
you know. But it was a lot. Like back in the 60s, they just record 30 songs and put out 10 albums out of that.
Yeah, and I mean those albums like in sequence were like some of the most important albums of American music, right? Like of all time.
Yeah.
And then kind of they hit the wall and then Mick wanted to go solo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was trying to go,
he tried real hard.
Yeah. So he put out an album around the same time as this album was being, conceived and produced called She's the Boss. Mm-hmm. Did you ever listen to She's the Boss?
I've heard it, yes.
Is it very bad?
It's pretty bad. Mick has like 4 solo albums and 3 of them are pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. That tracks.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
He like was putting all of his eggs in that basket. He was like, I'm a big deal. I'm a massive rock star. I'm a sex symbol. I'm, and I'm also kind of trying to reclaim that, that kind of identity of, being a sex symbol and being such a rock star when you're competing with like Prince.
Yeah.
And because that's what it was. Like 1986 was, a big year in music, a big year in culture, but especially because it was like starting to be the end of the 80s, like mm-hmm. the party's starting to wrap up. It's like a time of reckoning of like all the excess and like cheesiness and like shamelessness of the 80s are starting to come home to roost.
Everybody who was big in the 70s by 86 is just like, I don't know what this
What's
is
going
anymore.
On?
Like
the was landscape when... was changing drastically, like I just feel like English like post-punk influence seeped into everything else so deeply by the mid 80s that like bands like the Rolling Stones, who traditionally played like rootsy sort of blues music, they're getting left behind by these new sounds. And some bands adapted and with terrible results.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like, what was good during this time?
But, well, I mean, like XTC,
Prince,
Talking Heads,
Prince,
yeah.
This was also the same year as Howard the Duck, and the Sledgehammer music video, and Al Capone's Vault.
This is
kind of the Al Capone's
Bush.
Vault of music.
Yes,
of albums.
This is a year after Hounds of Love. There's some good shit going on. Rolling Stones, I don't think from the way this album sounds, it doesn't sound like they really tried that hard to adapt.
Yeah.
They kind of dug their heels in to the blues rock, but in like a manner where, I don't know, it sounds so clear to me how deeply they did not give a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely has that 80s production.
Yeah.
Like every instrument has like 30 layers of echo behind it.
Yeah.
Well,
it was produced by Steve Lillywhite.
Yes. Yeah.
Who did Drums and Wires by XTC. Mm-hmm. He did Boy by U2.
Oh, wow.
He did he invented gated reverb for that was Steve Lillywhite. Steve Lillywhite was like a pioneering producer, and I was actually shocked to see that he produced this album because this album sounds like shit. It's so scooped out. There's no mids in the whole album. It's just very bright, trebly. It's like, this album literally gave me a headache.
And built around vocals that sound literally like Mick Jagger is already down the stairs and out the door. Like, he sounds like he is not participating.
The whole album sounds like he was recording his solo album in a studio, and then the band was just waiting in a hallway outside that studio.
Yes.
And they would just, like, take whatever he was yelling at them on the way in and out.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Because he wouldn't even show up. So this is the production of this was very difficult because he was not showing up. Mm. The drummer, what's the drummer's name again?
Charlie Watts
was...
very much on heroin.
Yeah.
100%.
And you can hear it.
You can hear those heroin. Well, you can't tell. It's either, like, heroin drums or... clearly replaced by a session musician drums.
Yeah. Anytime he goes for a drum roll, it's like you're watching a child recital.
Yeah.
You're like politely clapping and you're like, please get me out of here.
And then all you can hear the whole, like above all, the main sound on this album is just the fucking snare.
Yeah.
A very aggressive snare.
He's basically just keeping time.
And I don't know. The vocal stylings on this album are really interesting. glad I was like going for like a nuanced commentary, and then you just did that, and that's correct. Yeah, like that's actually the correct commentary. So that's
also,
what it sounds like.
He also went like 5 feet away from the mic, which is probably accurate.
Necessary.
How it was done.
Yeah. Like, oh,
it was necessary to save the Stoppie's ears. It's Jagger is just, he's not really singing any notes.
No.
I know the guy can sing. I've heard him.
Yeah.
I've heard him croon beautifully on, you know, like a Wild Horses or.
And every album after this sounds perfect. But this one, he's just.
He's barking.
Well, like, what is he doing?
Barks. He's just barking.
He's just like upset that he's being forced to be in, like, to be involved in this. And is that like the motivation behind it, or is he trying to do like a?
I think that's just
saucy little dangerous.
I don't think he's doing saucy and dangerous.
I don't know.
I think Mick can do saucy and dangerous.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, not like in his sleep, really.
It literally does sound phoned in. Like, the sound quality is that they ripped it from a, you know, one of those actual corded stuck to the wall phones, like an answering machine message. He was like,
I think over under on vocal takes is like 1.5.
Like,
if he messed up a lyric, but there aren't really lyrics to this album,
There are there. Key points before we get on into this?
Well, as I mentioned, like, a little bit cheekily earlier on, they did not tour in support of this album.
Yeah.
One of the only albums they didn't tour in support of.
And Keith Richards really wanted to. He was, like, very upset and felt very slighted by Mick Jagger for refusing kind of to tour for this.
Well, Keith has two songs where he does lead vocals on this album.
Yeah, including the creepiest song I might have ever heard on this show, so which we'll definitely talk about soon. Oh, yeah, and didn't somebody die during the making of this album? Wasn't like a key?
Ian Stewart. He's not, he's kind of a.
It's like the honorary ex-sixth member of the band who like was still like, took on like a producer role for them, sort of.
Right, yeah. He was like a keyboardist who, you know, occasionally played with them, basically.
Yeah.
No one has
died.
So far, no one as an official member of the Stones has died while being an official member of the Stones.
All right. Well, speaking of guys who fucked with 14-year-olds, this first track features Jimmy Page on lead guitar.
Yeah.
What a segue.
This is one hit to the body.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. You want to separate the dark. All right. Well, this is, I guess, why they're legendary, huh? Because even, like, their worst album, by everybody's standards, this opening track and lead single is pretty fucking good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think Mick's singing more than one note the whole time.
One note of a song, it's fine. You're still gonna go buy my shit.
The song's good. I really have no complaints about it. It's got a great guitar solo. I think Jimmy Page plays the guitar solo.
Yeah.
Great riff.
I think probably
towards the end.
Am I right that it's the studio drummer who plays on this song and not Charlie Watts?
Gotta be.
Yeah, this drumming sounds very different from Watts' normal.
Well, it sounds very 80s, like, echoey drum machine good, so it's definitely, like, not him.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
It has that, that synthetic 80s feel.
Yeah, it's the closest they come to capturing the old magic.
Yeah, I kind of like their, like, cacophonous, like a prayer, like, chorus line vocals towards, you know, the...
Right.
the to the hood. Yeah. I mean, I think on a few songs that, like, that effect is not as well received and is very, like, Return of Bruno. But in this case, I think it works.
Yeah.
I will say, like, I think, you know, I think the song could have been better. I think it's a really good composition, but there's just an overarching sort of feel to this album where it seems it sounds a little dashed off. And it sounds sometimes more like a hungover band practice than like an actual, fully fleshed out album.
But that's the thing is when you're like an amazing band, your hungover band practice like still sounds good. And I think this is an example of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely, I would not call this, I think, honestly, this might be the best song that we've listened to on the show.
Better
this
than
and
Glamorous by Fergie.
This, I know, yeah. I was literally about to say, like, it's this and Glamorous. Like, those are the two best songs that we've listened to on the show.
I've liked quite a few songs we've listened to on the show. I don't know if I'd say this is the best, but this is definitely the best song on Dirty Work.
Well, also for me,
for
sure. And also, I was, like, very surprised by it because I didn't know this song at all. And I was, like, you know, like you said, like, underrated, like, yeah. I don't think anybody would have ever played this on the radio. Yeah. You
I
know?
Don't think if since they didn't tour behind this, they probably have never played the song live either. So it's right. Like, yeah. Just, yeah,
they've gone. They don't. I don't think they play anything from this album when they play live.
They have. There's one song that they do. Maybe we'll get to it, or if you want me to say it now. Harlem Shuffle gets.
They still
played.
Play Harlem Shuffle.
They play that live.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's probably because it's the only, like, the pace that they can keep on this on these tours these days. They're ancient.
Yes.
They're old-ass men.
Yeah.
Their first album came out when?
1963?
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
That is a fucking long time ago, Stoppies. I don't know if you're doing the math. I'm trying to. 56 years ago. That is a fucking long time. Your entire life is in the spotlight making rock music for us. So thank you for your service.
Right.
And thank you for the song.
Keith Richards said in that clip from the top of the episode, if we keep that part in, but he was talking about remembering when rock and roll first, like before rock and roll existed. I remember Henry Rollins was talking about this. I listened to Henry Rollins' podcast, Henry and Heidi, and he was talking about, he did an episode about Lemmy, about hanging out with Lemmy. And Lemmy was telling him, like, he was talking about how his mind was blown with Lemmy talking about, yeah, I remember when rock and roll didn't exist. You know, I saw the Beatles at the Cavern Club. They were really good. You know, like, It's mind blowing when you think about these old rock guys and like the life they've lived.
They've seen everything.
They've seen everything. For better or worse.
Right.
I think this is a good one to, you know, keep short and sweet.
Yeah.
Because
we all like it.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's pretty much the highlight, really.
One hits of the body. He does sound like a wrestler that's being pinned the whole time. This whole album, actually. It's that same kind of neck strain delivery.
Very 80s coked out promo sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah, which we love. We love a good 80s coked out promo. I mean, this is the crowd. All right, cool. Let's play the next one.
Yeah,
so
this one's
is
called Fight. Turn the light up.
Like, that's not how you say fight. It's not how that word works. I know your mouth is, like, comically large, but it's just, like, anything but the consonant.
Yeah.
This song,
the
song lyrically is like a blood for blood song.
Yeah.
Like, it is straight up beat down hardcore.
Yeah.
Lyrics are gonna pulp you to a mass of bruises because that's what you're looking for.
Wow.
There's a hole where your nose used to be. Going to kick you out of my door. Like, I can.
Gotta get into a fight. Can't get out of it.
Wow. Yeah, he says, I'm the suicide in that clip, I think.
Yeah, man. This is some.
What?
Dude, everyone fucking open up the pit.
Yeah.
But it's like some.
Show them how you do it at Brockton.
But it's like some lazy blue eyed blues. Like, it's not even close to anything that you would have a fight to.
No.
Who's having a fight to this?
Compositionally, this song is three chords. It is. Over and over.
It sounds
and over
like Dire Straits.
Yeah.
Sung by John Fogerty.
Yeah, sure. I hear that.
Yeah, okay. That works.
I mean, it does. He's doing the Bad Moon Rising, like.
Yeah.
He's
growling.
Affected growl. But it's like, got to get into a fight. Who is he so mad at? Is it Keith Richards?
I think it's everyone in the band. I think he's just like, why am I here?
Did he even write any of these songs? Like, he only wrote like two songs on the album, right?
This one is credited to Richards Jagger, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, the classic pair.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
I feel like a punk band could make this good if they like sped it up twice as much and just like blasted it out in like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And cut out a verse or two.
I'm just like not convinced though. Like, no. I'm convinced that he like is mad at his, you know, bandmates from like the seething disgust that is evident in the clip that we played at the beginning of the show, and the fact that his actions, you know, spoke louder than words, where he was going off and, you know, filming videos and doing promos for his solo album and clearly didn't want to be there. But in this case, it just feels, it feels so canned and like, cheesy.
Yeah. It feels like they were trying to ape some like punk style of some kind, and then like,
is that what they were trying to do?
I don't know.
I wonder about that. Is this, are they trying to be punk here?
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, they try to be reggae later on, so I don't know what the fuck they're thinking. And that is spoiler alert, Stuffy, is hits bad.
Yeah.
Don't let fucking Mick Jagger near a patois.
Yeah.
That was Keith on the leads on that one.
All right. Well,
but yeah, Jagger's doing the thing he does on every song, which is not really sing and just kind of growl and bark. Just a dog. He's a dog.
And I guess it would work if there was like more of a consistent theme to this album, like that really telling a story. But like dirty work. First of all, what does that mean? Do we even talk? We didn't even talk about the fucking cover. Oh my god, we have to talk about the cover of this album. Like, it looks like a United Colors of Benetton ad. It's shocking. Everybody's like Mick Jagger is as far out of the frame as he could possibly be while still technically being part of this photo.
Yeah.
And it was apparently like the first photo that they were all seated for, where all of them were on the cover at the same time since her Satanic Majesty's request.
Wow.
Right.
Annie
Leibovitz took the photo. But they're all wearing these like bright pantsuits and like have their legs at jutting angles. Why are they jazzercising on
like a giant green sofa?
Yeah, what's happening? What's happening? What is the theme? What is the concept?
And
everybody
then,
being
also,
deeply uncomfortable with each other,
look,
and like wanting to be somewhere else.
If you look closely, like Charlie Watts is asleep on the album cover. Like he is asleep.
Oh my god, he's nodding off.
He is nodded off, and
holy,
that's the best picture they can get.
Yeah.
It just shows you the condition the band was in at this time.
Yeah, they're all messed up. Like Charlie looks like if this was 30 years later, it looks like he's on a phone, but he is definitely sleeping in that picture.
He is.
Bill Wyman looks pretty miserable too. He's got a sourpuss on.
Yeah.
But they're all wearing hot pink.
Yeah. Except for Mick, who's wearing bright yellow and orange.
Of course.
And then Charlie, who's passed out, wearing blue.
He probably just woke up in that.
Yeah. But it's pretty gaudy. It's very 80s.
So again, there's like, it's confusing because it doesn't seem like there's no like thematic undercurrent to like tie anything together. So it's like you can't give, like, at least if they were doing something ambitiously like terrible, like, you know, like Kiss's Music from the Elder or something, where they were doing like a concept album and like we're making a commentary on like the shamelessness and emptiness of the 80s and how, you know, because there's a few songs that kind of hint to that. But
I don't think that the Rolling Stones really do concept albums ever.
Not really, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. At best, like, side A will be heavy stuff and side B will be ballads. That's about as deep as they go.
I think the problem with this one isn't, I don't know if it needs a concept, but I think it needs a little more variety. Because we're going to go through the album and you're going to hear...
Well, what's a fight with no stakes?
True. Yeah, that's true.
You know? I'm just saying. I think if they had some... Or, like, leaned into the conflict in the band or something. I don't know. But it is fun to kind of read that as a hidden...
I just feel like they couldn't be arsed.
No, they were definitely phoning it in, for sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of phoning it in, should we go on to the next song? What's this one?
Oh, this is the Harlem Shuffle.
Okay. So this is confounding.
This is a cover of the Bob and Earl classic, which is a million times better than this one.
Yeah.
If you're unfamiliar with it, it's the song that starts with that fanfare that they sampled for Jump Around. The ba, 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 ba. This one's like pretty good.
What?
Not really because of anything the Rolling Stones did. It's just a good song.
Yeah, they have a good...
It's cheesy as fuck. What?
Did you guys see the music video?
Yes. That's what I'm referencing. Yeah. And right. They're on like a closed like film set, like imitating what a jazz club might be.
Yeah, so it's directed by Ralph Bakshi, animated by John Kay, who did Ren and Stimpy.
I see. Yeah, there was some, you know, slightly problematic cartoon imagery.
Has Ralph Bakshi ever done anything that's not racist?
No. He has not. Cool World and Heavy Traffic. What a movie.
Heavy Traffic. I mean, it's good, but it's racist as hell.
It's good, but it's racist. It's true.
So basically the music video is like, it's all these cartoon cats. One of them transforms into Jagger, and it's this like voluptuous, caricaturized, animated black woman who transforms into a live-action black woman. And it's the Rolling Stones at this club surrounded by black people in zoot suits. Doing a cover of a, you know, black R&B song.
And an anemic Mick Jagger, like, limply shaking his tail feather is, like, that's kind of peak white mediocrity is what I'm going to say.
Like, it's like a Birth of a Nation for, like, cultural appropriation.
It's a weird appropriative
vibe.
Yeah.
It's offensive on many levels, right? Because it was like it was an art. It was originally a song produced by an African American artist. It's like offensive in that way because it's like you take this song that wasn't yours to begin with.
And don't improve upon it.
Yeah, you only use it as like a mechanism for, I don't know, just like lazily being like, well, we need another song in the album. Yeah. So just let Mick get up there with his tiny little fucking pancake ass and, you know.
We need another song that'll fit on the radio, kind of. Like one that will play because it has a chorus and isn't just Mick yelling fight at you for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
And this was the lead single off the album. And it was the first.
I thought it was one hit.
That was, I think, the second single.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the first time their lead single from an album was a cover since 1965. This was their best foot to put forward, and it wasn't even their song.
And it was a terrible foot. Put that foot away.
Yeah.
Sit that foot down.
And I hate to keep dogging on the guy, but Charlie Watts looked like he was about to pass out in that music video.
Because he is.
Yeah.
He had the good sense to be like, nah, I gotta fucking go. It's offensive as a cartoon. It's offensive as a concept. The execution is offensive. I just don't care. It's like, just because like some white guys can barely passably imitate like something and add cartoons, like I don't think that that's okay.
To be fair, Rolling Stones' whole career was built on the backs of
all of rock and roll. Right. Yeah.
But the Stones kind of specifically.
The Stones especially.
And Led Zeppelin.
All the British blues, you know, Stones, Led Zeppelin, early Fleetwood Mac, Yardbirds, Cream.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, the key word is blues, right?
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Shout out to Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
It also changed the world. You know, it's complicated. It's a complicated thing,
right.
I feel like. You know
right, but this song is not complicated. No. That's what I'm going to say. Is that you're
simple.
Right. I think we can rightfully critique and also appreciate the Rolling Stones and recognize their complex function in rock and roll and history in general.
That's
but
what I do.
But this is just not the one. This is not the thing.
It's really not.
No.
The worst thing is that, like, if anything shows up on, like, a compilation, or like I said, if they play something live from Dirty Work, it's this song.
And you would rather have it be one hit, right? It's going to be one
hit.
Yeah. I think it's because, like, by this point, they've kind of figured out their singles. Like, if there's a blueprint that they can follow, and one hit fits in that blueprint, but this one doesn't. So it's like, they were still kind of diverse towards the end there. That's great. It's not a great cover.
At least
but it's still,
it depicts an interracial relationship.
It's not the best cover. It's not good, but it's still, for me, probably the second best song in the album.
Wow. I don't know. I was very upset by this. But I didn't have a lot of other favorites now that you mentioned it. So, okay, should we move on to the next one? What's the next one?
Hold back.
Experience. He sounds like he's at the dentist, like with his fucking lips pulled apart, just like, I don't know what's happening. What's going on? Why is he saying the whole song from a garage down the street?
I don't know. I could hear him down the block.
Yeah.
Get this man a lozenge. Christ.
Just looking at these lyrics, he's absolutely making them up on the spot, too.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean,
what's he got?
You look in your history books, you delve in the past. Stalin and Roosevelt both took their chances. And George wrapped the nettle. It's do or dare from the banks of Delaware. That's a random verse in here.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He's giving you a little hardcore history here.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Don't matter if you ain't so good looking, if you ain't sharp as a blade, don't be afraid. Don't hold back. I don't know how that links to anything.
Yeah, what? Like, I guess it's like a who dares wins kind of like, the strong men of history and their will to whatever.
Yeah, is he singing to himself in the mirror? Is he like, is this like the equivalent of like slapping himself in the face right before like the big game? You know what I mean? Like
that SNL sketch with him and Jimmy Fallon.
Is he trying to get a boner? What's happening?
It's pre-Viagra by like 20 years.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Like, don't hold back. You got this. Ooh, big game.
Oh, yeah, this is just him psyching himself up when he's got coke dicks.
Not
this is right
sure.
around the same time as Dancing in the Streets. Yeah.
Right, which we talked about on an earlier episode when we did our worst of David Bowie. Yeah. And
we decided it was the worst David Bowie song ever.
It was, but Mick Jagger certainly helped, so we can't take away.
Let's not undersell his contributions to
that. It was atrocious. I think he was wearing the same shirt that he is on the cover of this album. But like,
and he's singing in the same style, if I recall.
Exactly. Well, and it's the same kind of like phoned in, like we can do literally anything. And the fact
Tokyo!
Los Angeles! I mean, that's the thing is that he could do anything. And that's like, this album is a realization of that power.
Yeah.
Right?
I am interested. I do think it's interesting that you had mentioned that maybe he's trying to be punk on this album, because I think maybe there's something to that.
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe it's just like the most energetic, youthful sound like near them. And they were just like, let's try that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the thing is they're kind of, I know, right.
That's true.
Well, so are they. I mean, they've been zombies this whole time. Well, that's the thing is that I think that they really are trying to like, they're trying to hold on to relevancy and they're trying to like navigate like what their future looks like in a world of, you know, rapidly changing music that they really aren't equipped to follow the trend of. And this album is just a weird mismatch of them sometimes trying to like emulate these trends and then other times just being like, well, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to do the Harlem Shuffle. You know, we're just going to like cover an old blues standard kind of, you know, like, and I don't know. Like there's just, again, no creative vision. Like it's clear that none of them had been in the same room together.
In years. And during this recording either.
Right.
I think it's interesting, though, because I don't think, like, the albums that followed this one, I haven't listened to all of them, but, like, I've heard Voodoo Lounge.
Yep, I have.
And, like, it's a lot better than this.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I think they got along better after this.
Yeah.
I think.
There's something.
Maybe this was therapeutic for them, but I'll tell you, for us, the listeners, It's unfortunate.
This is definitely their nadir. Undercover, the album before this, I think, is pretty maligned as well.
I like Undercover, but yeah, I can.
But you like every album, don't you?
True. That is true. But Undercover is kind of weird and interesting, and like they seem to be trying a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Undercover's not like I haven't heard all of Undercover, but I listened to a couple songs because we were trying to figure out which album to do for this.
Yeah.
Originally, we were going to do their Satanic Majesty's Request, and I listened to that, and I was like, this album rules. I'm going to break the scale and give this a positive 4, so we can't do that.
Yeah, we can't do that. It's not what we're here for, Stoppies.
Although the Rolling Stones, for whatever reason, hate that album.
Yeah.
They really hate that album in particular. I think they hate that more than this album,
which is weird.
Yeah.
That's very weird.
This is clearly the sound of a deeply fractured relationship. This is this their Saint Anger?
Ooh.
That might be, yeah.
Yeah.
That might be fair.
Yeah, that is fair. And that's the thing is that, though, if you compare them, is this much better than St. Anger?
Yes.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So it's like them at their really shittiest is still way better than...
Yeah, but they're also not like, let's not do guitar solos and let's make every song 8 minutes.
Right, they weren't like, okay, let's take away like all of the elements that make us good.
Yeah.
They were more like, okay, all the elements that make us good hate each other and let's figure out how to... turn that into an album.
Yeah.
Or, like, actually, not even really try to figure it out, but just kind of make it an album and hope, you know, hope for the best.
Yeah, speaking of guitar solos, like, this song actually does fade out on a pretty nice, like, three guitar harmony part. Like, they're doing some cool noodling at the end.
They do cool guitars in general on this album. The guitars are not my problem.
They're good guitar players.
It's
for sure,
it's the Keith fact that the vocals, like, literally sound like, it's not just like 1 foot out the door, Mick. He really could not be arsed to like, you know, play a role. And then, you know, the recently dead keyboardist and the basically dead drummer. Like, that's kind of a recipe for a mess.
Yeah, Keith and Ronnie are keeping it together. For the most part.
And that's shocking. When you're holding, when the, you know, when the, all of the power rests in, like, Keith Richards' hands, like, you're in trouble.
Well, we're going to hear what Keith Richards has to offer on this next song.
Oh, man. But before we do that, before should we take a little break?
Yeah, we'll take a little break and we'll see you soon.
Okay.
All right, we're back. This next song is Why You Gotta Be Too Rude. It's called Too Rude.
It's about as convincing a patois as magic! Exclamation point.
The Stones were doing it first.
As always. All right, this is Too Rude. Okay, everyone.
So I guess they just got really into Sandinista by the Clash.
Yeah.
And tried to do that.
I guess. Jer, do you have thoughts on this? Because I am baffled. I don't know where to start.
One, I think they've tried reggae a couple times at this point, and it's never really been good. But this is the first time Keith's been singing it, which adds another layer of, like, weirdness to it.
He's got, like, quintuple tracked vocals here, trying to do these strained harmonies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's bad. It's bad.
Yeah.
Like, I guess reggae is just flaccid upstrokes and yelling fake patois in a garage.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
And the upstrokes are, like, they're more just pick scraping noises than actual chords. Right.
Yeah, they're nothing. They're it's a nothing. Lot of, like, it's horrible. Yeah, it's horrible. It's again offensive because it's like you're taking, in this case, an entire genre, distilling it into this meaningless, like, drivel, and then, like, you know, again appropriating it and not offering anything, any little twist or anything interesting or anything that would. I'm not even asking you to improve it. I'm asking you to, like, do a decent tribute to a genre of music that you are just, like, desecrating.
Yeah.
You're just, like, you are colonizing this fucking music genre. Like, what the fuck, dude? Yeah. What the fuck? You're mining it, profiting off of it, and fucking desecrating it in the meantime. Like, what are you, what?
I can't believe it's only 3 minutes long.
Wow. it feels endless.
Like six, yeah.
The Clash did it the exact same thing, like, actually competently, like, 3 years prior.
Right. You
know? It sounds like a song they would have left off of Sandinista.
Right,
like,
exactly. Because they knew better.
But I am going to give the Rolling Stones points for switching up the style for once on this album.
Right.
But, do you give them points? For that?
Yeah. I'm going to give them a point.
But they do it such incompetent, like, they do such a terrible job.
Yeah, no, I know.
It's almost,
I agree.
It's better that they leave it off.
It's chill, but the rest of the way is pretty much, like, pretty brutal, like, one-note rock songs.
Yeah.
So.
I think I'll take this over just another fight, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I guess.
And we're about to get, like, four of them in a row now.
I know.
By a thin margin, I'll take this over another fight.
Okay.
But yeah, no, it sucked. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's just not good. It's not good. It's not good.
You're right. The Clash did it way better on Sandinista.
Yeah.
There's so much echo.
It's so, okay, another thing about, like, yeah, there's so much echo. And another thing about reggae is, like, the whole thing is built around the beat.
Yeah.
And they can't even keep a beat. I think they let Charlie do the drums on this one.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, it's a reggae song. Yeah. He can be nodding off and still pull this together. And
it's the slowest song we got. Like, let him.
Yeah, let him go wild. And by wild, like, let him barely function, but it'll be fine. And in this case, like, it's so not fine. Like, he's not even close to the beat.
My read on this is that either they all just didn't give a shit and they only did a couple takes of every song, or like they did a bunch of takes and this was still like the best that they could do with Charlie Watts in the state that he was in.
They didn't do any bunch of takes.
Every song has like audible fuck ups.
Yeah.
On the drums.
Yeah.
This one included. I mean, they try to cover it up with like with echo effects.
So much echo. Just that garage sound with any of without like it actually being good.
And that is kind of like Steve Lillywhite's thing. Like that's if you listen to Susie and the Banshee album that he did, like it's the same thing. And also, fun fact about Steve Lillywhite, like he went from producing some of the most iconic albums of the 80s to like producing for Dave Matthews Band.
That album didn't even come out at first.
The one he did for Dave Matthews Band?
Yeah, that one got scrapped and then got, I think, remixed maybe and then put out as something else. I was kind of a Dave Matthews Band fan in high school.
Oh boy.
In high school, I was, and I'll give stuff they do a chance, but it doesn't really reach me anymore. But I'll defend a lot of bad bands, but Dave Matthews is one that I really can't do. I'm just not qualified.
All right.
Okay.
Should we go on to the next song?
Why don't we do it? Let's do it.
This one's Winning Ugly.
Oh wow, this is interesting. They're trying to make a statement on this one. Let's try to figure out what it is. Back in the dressing room, the other side is we find. And we're winning, 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 winning. And we're winning, winning, winning. And we're heading for the heartbreak, heading for the blues. Okay, this is kind of meta, right? Or something? I don't know. Maybe. Is it?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Is it kind of being like self-aware, sort of, maybe? Like a commentary on the emptiness of the 80s?
I think it's trying to be that, but it's too half-baked to really.
Yeah, right. It's like, and so also glossy. Imitation is that the way that you hope to like critique it by just sounding like
because this has
Huey Lewis and the News, like
big 80s energy on this.
Yeah. Right.
It's very shades of Bruno.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
The way I felt about it, it feels like it should be like the music for a montage in like an underdog sports movie.
Yes.
Like the little Winning. Rascals aren't playing very well, but they're having a lot of fun, and they're going to beat them with elbow grease or whatever.
It's got that, like, higher ground bass line.
Yeah,
those synths, this is the first song with, like, big 80s synths in it.
Which, you got to give them credit for going big. I don't know. I can't do it. My mouth won't make those shapes. I'm not giving them credit because it's still very lazy, if they're trying to make a point about something.
I think you're giving them too much credit because I don't think they're trying to make a point about 80s excess or anything. I think they're just kind
of... I mean, this was the pinnacle of 80s excess, though. I mean, I mentioned this at the beginning. Like, this is Peter Gabriel. This is Cool Ranch Doritos. It's Al Capone's Vault. It's Howard the Duck. Like, this is the place that we are situated here.
Yeah, no, but I just mean lyrically, like, I don't think they're trying to, like, make social commentary. I think he's just saying, like, I cheat to win because it's cool.
Is that what he's saying? Or is he trying to say, like, we're winning, but we're winning ugly? Like,
I'll pull up the lyrics.
Okay, go right ahead.
Like, I've been looking at the lyrics as we've been talking about it, and I'm not sure. I do think it kind of started from where you're saying, but I don't think Mick wrote anything enough to, like, make a point on this album.
Yeah, again, because he was barely. Wasn't it only like three of the songs, or like the traditional Jagger, like Richards, like combo, like and it very much sounds like that. It sounds very disconnected. Sounds very phoned in. Like weird production. Just overall, very, very, very like distant.
Yeah.
And then it's interesting though, because the vocal delivery, the vocal styling on this album is very like raspy and dangerous and like, you know, passionate, right? Yeah,
that's where I think dirty like work comes into play. Like this overcompensation. They're like trying to get down and dirty.
Yeah. Well, that's what this is too, like winning ugly, like dirty work. Like I was thinking about it like from like an American Psycho standpoint or like, you know, from that synthetic, coked out, we're just here to get ahead, fucking shoulder pads for everyone, shamelessness of 1986, and like whether they were commenting on it. But you're right. I don't think they were in the same room enough to even have an authentic commentary about that.
Yeah. So here's,
because they were perpetuating that and profiting off of it.
Here's the lyrics. I want to be on top, forever on the up, and damn the competition. I never play it fair. I never turn a hair. Just like the politicians, I wrap my conscience up. I want to win that cup and get my money, baby. But back in the dressing room, the other side is weeping, and we're winning, winning ugly. But
okay. Like, Are you?
I don't think he's saying, like, this is awful. I think he's saying this is cool.
The next thing is, like, and we're heading for the heartbreak, and we're heading for the blues. So I do think there is some, like, subtext of regret?
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe. But I want there to be. I'm just aching for an actual human emotion on this whole fucking album, because that's the whole thing. Is like, you don't get it.
Yeah, Mick's not the best at human emotion in general, so.
Right.
Horny is an emotion, for sure. So, but he's not that on here.
I'm very emotional.
Yeah, there's no horniness on this album.
No. That's weird. It's all just being mad at his band members.
Yeah.
Right. He's like, fuck you. I could just be doing She's the Boss. You know what I mean? Really? Like, that's what you have to offer? Ugh. And that's the thing, is you have to hold these people to a higher standard because of their, you know, their status as musicians and their capacity as musicians. Like, it really does. Like, at first I was very much like, oh man, this is maybe too good, you know, because like compared to a lot of trash that we listen to on the show, which is a lot of trash. It's like, how do you put this in the same category as Broken Side? But if you think about the fact that like their capacity, like their ceiling is so much higher, like you do have to hold them accountable.
Yeah.
And like, this is a very, like, poor representation of their talent.
Also, dude, like, Millionaires was way better than this.
What? Oh my God.
Millionaires was way better than this.
Do you hear yourself? Is that a thing that you say, that you stand by?
Well, by this point, Mike was probably deep into headache zone.
I literally got a headache.
I did pop
mids.
And a leave during the course of this album.
This is better than Full Circle by the Doors. I'll say that.
Yeah.
The Doors lows were much lower than the Rolling Stones.
It's true. Shout out to Ethan Marsh. Thanks for thanks for going through that with us. You think Millionaires? Actually, yeah, Millionaires. At least it was more fun.
Party Like a Millionaire and Alcohol.
Let's Get Fucked Up.
So much more enjoyable than anything on this album.
It's true. Because at least, like, okay, their artistic statement was deeply shallow. Like,
deeply shallow.
That's a nice and oxymoronic. It was like embarrassing.
They were on oxys and moronic.
And they were. They were railing them in the hotel room. But at least they had a perspective. Yeah, they stuck with it.
Yeah.
It was fucked up.
Their perspective was like, you know, on their backs, legs up.
Yeah.
through a haze.
It was great.
It was great.
It was great. Yeah, this is a sad. It's not even a coke dream. It's not even a coke nightmare. It's kind of just like
this whole album's hangover. A hangover.
Yeah, right.
That's
right.
The like distinct feeling I get from this of like just. I feel like they're just like going through the motions and want it to be over because like they all also have a headache.
Yeah, they probably had some like obligation to the record company that made them all get together or, you know, quote unquote get together. To do this, while Mick was like, I don't want to do
this
at
all. It's like the 13-year-old that they
that Bill Wyman married,
coerced and not consenting.
His bride, his blushing bride.
Christ! All right, let's move on to the next song. The next song is
shit.
Back to Zero.
Oh.
Oh.
You know what? I'm gonna give this album credit. It's way more diverse than I remembered. not to like increase its quality, but I, you know, it was just like I didn't remember there was a funk song on here.
Yeah.
That's so funky.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the rest of the band maybe was going for like a throwback. Throwback James Brown mixed with like, you know, contemporary Talking head sort of sounds.
Yeah.
But then Jagger just came on it and just did his whole thing to it. You know, like,
what the fuck?
Not going with the feel of it at all.
He sounds like Barney from The Simpsons. Why is he so nasally? Why is he saying nothing? Like, what? That's not how you say nothing. Nothing.
I like the little woo that came at the end of the chorus. That was the best part by far.
Yeah, actually, the ad-libs in general, the non-lyrical things that he does are all pretty good.
The lyrical things are kind of telling that he does on this song. He says, I prefer to rot. I don't want to pop.
Yeah, the song I think is about nuclear war.
Oh.
Well, he's basically saying he doesn't want to be nuked by Russia, yeah. I think.
Back to nothing.
Back to zero. Yeah.
The lyrics I took down are, I worry about my great-grandchildren living 10 miles beneath the ground.
Same.
I worry about their whole existence, the whole damn thing's in doubt.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, this song is about something.
Yeah.
Bravo.
It still sounds like a return of Bruno, like, G side.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not good. Like, what
was
is...
Return of Bruno really... just a rip off of this album?
Maybe. Because
it came out a year later.
I mean, yes. It's like weird to like also like inject some sort of social commentary, like, what is it, 8 songs in? You know what I mean? Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
All right. You're worried about your grandchildren?
Great-grandchildren.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
I'm sure he has many.
Yeah, I'm sure he's a pretty absentee father, but he's definitely worried about his great-grandchildren. I'm not going to any recitals or any of that bullshit, but I'm worried about the, you know, kids of your kids. are they going to be wiped out in a nuclear holocaust? Well,
turns out, no. Global warming.
Yeah. Turns out, no. That's the
climate
one.
Climate catastrophes.
Back to zero. Carbon emissions. What?
I don't know what they're doing on here, to be honest. It's baffling.
You're our resident expert, Jer. If we don't have it, if we can't hang on to you, what is the star to our wandering bark? What do we have left to hold on to?
Know, I think they were just like trying to capture some of the like disco-y funky things that they've done in the 70s, like, you know, Miss You or whatever. And they did not get on the same page about it.
Oh, man. This is Miss You is so good.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Like, that whole Some Girls album.
They're not even in the same book.
They did disco, like, so good on that album.
Right.
But then...
All right, let's move on, because clearly there's not much else to say on this one.
This is a song that I've heard a bunch of times, and I completely forgot existed.
Oh, this was I don't wanna do your dirty work no more.
Yeah, so that's this one. Yeah. Let's listen to Dirty Work.
No, it's not actually that song either.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I wish.
I told you guys this before we started recording, but like I listened to this earlier today to, you know, prepare for this podcast, and I fell asleep sometime during like I think maybe Hold Back or Fight, and then I woke up.
That was like
up,
the second song.
Yeah, I was battling a cold all week. I'm tired, but like I like fell asleep during one of the
but
early
also
songs.
The album's boring.
Yeah, and I woke up during the course of Dirty Work and thought that the songs had just like I was like, wow, I didn't realize that they like made the songs like seek into one another like so smoothly. That's something I never noticed after listening to this album for 20 years or whatever. And now I just realized I just fell asleep and the songs all sound the same.
Wait, literally that.
This is like Fight Part 4.
Yeah.
Right.
And this one is like particularly sloppy.
Yeah.
Like the drums, the drumming is very bad. The instruments are like barely in time with each other. Like this doesn't sound like, you know, one of the most legendary bands of all time. You know, this sounds like a band that really can rock the stage at Nantasket Beach.
Yeah, right. I mean, this enabled 1,000 bands at Nantasket Beach.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, this album, they just listened to this one. They were like, we can do it too.
That's all you need to do to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because, again, this is where, you know, I made that comment earlier about, like, okay, wait, maybe this was, like, they were trying to do some sort of concept or there was some theme or, like, some intentionality behind it because the idea of, like, dirty work and you know, winning ugly and, like, this kind of, this corporate culture, what the 80s were like. And the lyrics in this one are kind of, like, getting to that. Like, I'm wondering, like, is it sort of... You could read it as, like, taking aim at, like, yuppie culture or, like, the, you know, hypocrisy of, like, industry execs, like, getting, you know, fat off of rock and roll as a culture and, like, as a genre, whatever.
Or, like, anti-Reagan, anti-Thatcher.
Right. Yeah, yeah, there was, like, kind of pieces of that where glimpses of it, you know? In this song, I think more than any of them, that was, like, okay, the lyrics do seem somewhat intentional, at least on some level. And appreciate that.
The lyrics are also hilarious.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
You let somebody do the dirty work, find some loser, find some jerk.
Yeah.
Find some dumbass, do it all for free. Let somebody do the dirty work, find some loser, find some jerk, find some greaseball. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, so he's talking about how, like, you know, people who don't ever get their hands dirty or, like, actually do any of the work get all the credit and, like, the glory.
Yeah. Which I'm sure relates to the band and how he feels about them.
Right.
For sure.
Ooh. Take us there, Jer.
Yeah, because it's Mick, and he's saying about, like, letting everybody or, like, doing all the work and no one else ever does it for him.
Right.
I'm sure he feels that way because he's the front man.
Of course.
And, you know, he's out on front and everybody, but he's fucking wrong.
But he's right.
Because everyone else does the composing of the music. And,
right.
Yeah, maybe he's just throwing shots. Actually, did he write this song? Because I know, like, Bill Wyman... And what's the other guitarist's name?
Ronnie Wood.
Ron Wood, yeah.
Ron Wood and Bill Wyman wrote most of the songs on this album.
And Keith Richards.
So maybe this is them taking shots at Mick.
It's
for passing the buck to them.
I think Mick might have done the lyrics on a lot of them because this one is credited to Jagger, Richards, and Wood.
Okay.
All right.
And the majority of them look like they have Mick and Keith on the credits, but with... maybe a couple people else,
yeah,
you know, added on.
Generally, the best ones were the ones that were Keith and Mick solo, you know, writing the songs.
Oh, Too Rude was also a cover.
Was it?
Oh,
yeah, well, apparently. That tracks, I guess.
Yeah.
Sure.
So two
again,
covers.
Another example of probably, you know, songs that were produced and performed by black people that
probably
didn't get their proper recognition and the Rolling Stones appropriated and desecrated.
Yes.
Cool. Okay, cool. Yeah. Just checking. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Well, I'm glad I was able to learn that today and also give the proper credit right here.
Who's it originally by?
It's by an artist called Half Pint.
Half Pint.
Shout out Half Pint.
Shout out to Half Pint.
Shout out to Half Pint.
You
and...
can't be alive.
He recorded his version in 1984, so he might still be alive.
Wow, a weird, like, post-second wave ska.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That was like a dance hall, or not dance, that was like a dub reggae sort of song.
Yeah.
You know?
So I'm sure it was even lazier than the Harlem Shuffle cover.
And that's saying something.
Yeah.
Okay. Shall we move on to the next song?
Yeah.
Yeah, this next song is Had It With You.
Yeah.
You know what, Rolling Stones? I've had it with you, buddy. I've had just about enough of your dirty work. Cool. It's another song that sounds like this.
This one's a little faster.
You know, it's a standard 12-bar blues song about loving a dirty fucker that is both a sister and a brother.
Floating in the moonlight.
Yeah.
And then he sings about Always Got Behind You. And I'm wondering, is this a song about gay sex? Maybe.
Well, he was maybe fucking David Bowie.
David Bowie. Yeah. And possibly, was Iggy Pop part of those little trysts too? Yeah, most likely. Yeah, maybe. I mean, that would make it interesting. I that's all I could do at this point.
Yeah, the song sounds super gay.
Yeah.
Right. It's... All right.
Listen, it's like... either that or it's another song about the band hating each other.
It's that queer
I'll
anthem
take what
had
I can
it with
get.
You.
Well, no, because of the double entendre.
Yeah.
I've had it it with you.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? That's a British slang for having sex. So
like
maybe...
Like that song, Make It With You.
Make It With You, Have It With You. Yeah, that's, I don't know. Listen, again, I will take any entendre I can get because most of this is meaningless and terrible. So, like, if it could be about gay sex, great.
Sure. Yeah.
He was having it in 1986. That's the only reason that dancing in the street happened. Come on. They were like, baby.
If Marianne Faithful is to be believed, you know. I mean, yeah. Well, allegedly.
Her name is Faithful, so. How are we going to question her? I'm sure we could ask Pamela DeBar of Pamela's Pajama Party, another Pantheon podcast.
Yeah, let's get Pamela on to settle this once and for all. Yeah.
We want to know. Pamela would know. Okay, but that's all I got for this one. Let me tell you.
There's really nothing to be said at this point because it's like the eighth song that sounds like this.
It's all about a toxic relationship, and it's like punctuated by harmonica solos. So it's like, what else do you got to say?
Very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sounds like it might pertain to the band a little bit.
I had it with you. Do you think they fucked? Did Keith Richards and Mick Jagger fuck?
No.
No.
I feel like they'd like each other a lot better if they did.
Yeah.
They probably should have.
Yeah.
It would have been for the best. All right. So we only have two more songs left. Let's fucking
really
do it.
One.
Really only one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One song.
Well, yeah. One
then...
is not a song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So should we play both of them then?
Yeah. Sure. We'll play Sleep Tonight.
Oh. This is an experience.
And it's followed by A Key to the Highway.
Which is just a piano solo.
Just a little honky-tonk piano.
Better get some sleep tonight. They say you are hot. This is some good night. They say more shadows. Cry.
Oh,
all right. Well,
sleep tonight.
We've had a good run of songs going out on just confounding notes this season.
It's true.
The Nicki Minaj verse at the end of Chance the Rapper's album.
Oh yeah,
and the 5 minutes of whirring sounds at the end of the Tool album.
Ooh, yeah, that'll do it. That'll do it.
And now we've got a. Yeah, and then preceded by a like
really
ballad,
creepy,
yeah. Keith Richards ballad.
He's singing to his 13-year-old wife in that song. Sleep tonight. What is happening? Like, it sounds like the song starts out like it sounds like Christmas Shoes.
Yeah.
Do you guys know that fucking song?
Yeah. No, what is that?
Oh my god, Jer knows.
Yeah.
Sir, I wanna buy these shoes for my mama, please. You don't know this?
No, what the fuck is it?
It's atrocious.
I only became aware of it like a couple like. Christmases ago.
Oh, it's a horrible thing. Yeah. It's all about like a sad, like poor child who's like begging to buy like his cancer-stricken mother like shoes for Christmas, or it's like maybe like health insurance or like I don't know, like anything else. But when she meets Jesus, she's gonna wear these shoes. Anyway, it sounds like that. It sounds like a fucking Hallmark original like musical number. Like this is a yikes.
Yeah.
It is a yikes for me.
These guys really sound like they could use some sleep tonight.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Sleep it off, try again in the morning.
Yeah. Tonight. I like this song.
What?
Yeah. I think it's very sweet because even though it's all addressed
wrong?
To baby, I think Keith Richards probably seems like the type to just refer to everybody as baby. And that's the headcanon I have going on.
What? Okay. I just don't understand, like, why are you concerned about my sleeping patterns, Keith Richards? Like, why do you need to know about what's going on? Like, the image of, like, a withered, fruit leather-faced Keith Richard, like, because it'll give you nightmares for the rest of your life? Like, is that why you would, like, please sleep?
I also
tonight.
Think there's a solid chance that it's about somebody, like, ODing on heroin.
Right, yeah. And yeah. Charlie Watts.
Yeah. It has that vibe.
Yeah.
And also, I kind of liked this song in the beginning because I was kind of waiting for a ballad, you know, and it was waiting for something to break up the fun songs.
Right.
But, I got really bored with it because it does just kind of repeat for 5 minutes, like, endlessly.
It is too long.
It's so long, and it's so, like, it's drivel. Like, what is he even saying? Why?
Well, he's saying sleep tonight.
Yeah.
I mean.
Over and over again.
Yeah.
Okay, this is where I start to say, like, you know, this album's really on and off. Like, it's off key and it's on heroin. Like, like, it doesn't even hit anything like resembling a note. Like, there's no.
He's got some pretty back.
This
vocals.
Is like a sleep paralysis, like like nightmare when like the sandworms are at the edge of your bed, being like, "We're gonna fucking eat your skull." This is fucked up. I feel disturbed and distraught.
I love sandworms.
Give me the sandworms.
Yeah, fan of the sandworms.
Yeah.
So we're done. Yeah. So.
Oh God, we finally get to sleep tonight.
Yeah.
That's good. Because the end piano solo is that.
That was actually my favorite song on the album.
It was blissfully.
it's just a tribute to the keyboardist that died.
Oh.
That's it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, is that what Sleep Tonight's about?
Maybe
too?
Actually, now that you put it that way.
Damn. That makes it a little more poignant.
Now you put him back to neck. Yeah, okay.
Well, is it? Are we giving them that credit?
You know what? I'm going to give them that credit because I want to give them something.
Give them something.
Yeah. Like, they could have put Sleep Tonight in the middle of the album, like, where it would have broken up things a little bit, but they saved it to the end.
Yeah.
So I think that was intentional.
Instead, they put Too Rude in the middle of the album.
Well, they need to lull you to sleep, and then you wake up, and you're like, okay, it's fine. It's over. Great. Awesome. That's how I feel. We've been in a beautiful fugue state together, and honestly, I have to thank you, Jared, for being part of this with us. This has been, we made it through.
Yeah.
We made it through. Give ourselves a round of applause. We deserve it. Yay. Yeah. Good job, us. All right, so it's time.
That was a tepid clap.
It was tepid. Listen, I'll add in.
We've lost all enthusiasm for life.
So, I mean, we're phoning it in, just like all of the participants.
We're winning ugly.
We're winning ugly, baby. I'm going to add in some like sitcom canned laughter for all of these parts. Okay, so, Jer.
Yeah.
This is what we do. We made it through, and now it's time to look back on the past hour and a half-ish of our lives and say, you know, and quantify, put a number to the badness that we just witnessed. So everything that we review on the show is bad music. So it's on a scale of 0 to -5 of something. And you get to decide what that thing is.
Well, thankfully, I've listened to the show and I came prepared.
Oh, yeah. An honest and loyal stoppy.
I'm giving this a negative two.
Negative 2, yep.
Mick Jagger solo albums.
Ooh, was that the only one that he had? Was it just She's the Boss?
No. He's had 4, and 2 of them, like, one was the year before this album and one was the year after. So this was just like a pit stop for him.
A shit
for
sandwich.
Real. Yeah.
With shit bread.
Like, with shit bread.
I can't print that.
Okay, a negative two. And why?
Because it's reasonably, it's like the baseline for shittiness for the Rolling Stones is still pretty high.
You're right.
So like it's not unlistenable. I still like listen to it when I'm bored of like their better stuff. And like every now and then,
I gotta spice it up with a fucking Harlem Shuffle every once in a while.
Every now and then, I'm just like, I don't know, maybe I misremembered how bad Dirty Work was. And then I put it on and I'm like, yeah, it was still pretty bad, but I didn't turn it off midway through.
You just
through
fell asleep midway through.
Exactly.
So you did the equivalent of that. You just, your brain did it for you. Okay.
So yeah, two.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not.
Negative two.
It's not the worst
negative
thing.
Negative two. And, let's be clear.
Know, yeah.
It's still negative.
Yes, it's still negative, but it's not like, I mean, there's worse things out there, like Mick Jagger's solo albums.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Sounds reasonable.
Maybe a future episode.
Yeah.
We'll have you back.
Yeah,
for sure. I'm going to say something similar. I felt that this was not that bad, and I do think that One Hit was kind of a banger, and I dug it. And none of the rest of these songs were honestly, the worst songs were the ones where they shamelessly appropriated the art of people of color without, not only without adding anything, but like actively taking away from it. And I am still offended by that and distraught. But the rest of it was not that offensive. And so I am not going to be quite as kind as you are, Jer.
I'm very kind.
You're very kind, and I appreciate that. And I do, I think that also part of this has to do with the fact that I haven't done my due diligence with the Rolling Stones and listened to enough of their albums all the way through, because I think if I did, I would hold them to an even higher standard. But I'm going to give it a negative 2.5. I don't think this was that bad. I don't think even the worst songs at their worst did just what happen to you. It put me to sleep, and that's kind of like that's kind of a gift on this show. So I'll give it to them. Negative 2.5.
I don't know how you guys could sleep through this album, man. This album was like just the clanging. It's just clanging sounds. The clanging sounds with a huge, super loud snare and a guy just screaming and barking. It was.
I mean, it woke me up eventually. So,
you're not
wrong.
Compositionally, like, yes, look, it is the Rolling Stones. Like, you can do much worse. Even at their worst, they're still the Rolling Stones, you know, technically. But, I definitely think this is a bad album. I don't want to be charitable to it at all. Like, the first song was good, and that's all I can really give it. I have heard albums that are compositionally worse, you know, where the talent level is lower.
Lots of them.
But this was such a sloppy, tossed off, like, afterthought of an album that I can't be too generous to it. I gotta give this a negative three.
We're all kind of in the same range, though.
Yeah. I feel like that's fair. I feel like that's reasonable. Yeah.
What's the quantifier again? Negative three. Oh,
Mick Jagger solo albums. Yeah, right.
So, yeah. It's worse.
It's definitely still bad.
It's still pretty bad.
It's still pretty bad. Yeah, I'll say that is true. But you know who is not bad? You know who's in fact great is our incredible guest, Jer Palopple, who is here today.
Yay! Thank you. I'm so happy to be here too.
We are so glad that you offered us almost 2 hours of your life.
Really? Wow, I didn't realize.
To really, awesome. Time flies when you're talking about bad music, let me tell you. I hope so for all you honest and loyal stoppies. All right, the Apple Podcast Connects tells me that you listen to the full episodes. But, give us feedback. We'll hear it. We'll still make every episode an hour and a half, no matter what.
The negative.
If you're lucky.
At the time of this record, the Tool album has come out recently, and we are seeing the one-star reviews start flowing in.
We are.
So if you're a fan of the show, and if you haven't already rated and reviewed it, rate and review it. Throw us a little bone.
Yeah, help us out.
Help us help fight the Tool army.
Yeah. I mean, normally I'd feel biased going on after I've been on it and like giving you a 5-star rating, but like some metal Tool fans.
Yeah, you really got to. You got to go for it.
You got to need all hands on deck.
Yeah.
All right. So, Jared, tell us where we can find you out there in the world and promote anything that you got coming up that we should know about.
I think the best thing to find me on is the WrestleDown podcast. If you like pro wrestling, we chat about it, we joke about it, and I make up fake sponsors because it's the fun thing I like to do. And
perfect.
That's it. Yeah.
We're ready to get real sponsored by Dick Pills. Hopefully we'll be
Dick
here.
Pill money. Dude, by the time this airs, maybe we'll be doing the Dick Pill ads.
Oh, man, please. Oh, God, my dick is ready.
Yeah.
Perfect. This is a kickoff dick ads with Rolling Stones.
This is the one. This is the one. Oh, man. Okay, so, Jared, if you ever want to do a crossover, let us know. Yeah. We can talk about wrestling for a long time.
We're
ready.
Fans. Okay. Heather usually cuts out some me talking about wrestling from
every episode. It could be its own podcast, the fucking wrestling tangents on this show. But
would love to if I ever get into a bigger studio area than bedroom.
We're doing great, and we thank you very much, and we can find you on the internet and all the other places.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Twitter, my handle is Swing Dingling. And and Instagram, it's Mr. _ Swing Dingling or Mr. _ Swing Dingling.
Your formal name.
Yes, because the other one was taken.
Perfect. Great. Yeah. All right. So check that out, Stoppies. And you can find us, as always, at MakeItStopPodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at MakeItStopCast. We are part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Thank you, Pantheon Podcast. Thank you to the Dick Pills. Thank you to everybody else in our community of podcast producers. And find us wherever you get your podcasts. Give us some fucking reviews to balance out the Tool fans, please. Some 5 stars. We really appreciate it. We like you a lot. And keep sending us like Instagram messages and suggesting weird bad albums for us to talk about. We love that. All right.
Yeah. And make it stop podcast@gmail.com.
Oh yeah. If you want to email us, we don't get any emails, so like we'd really love that. That'd be really cool. Can you what should they submit to us from this episode?
Do a light bright version of the Dirty Work album cover.
That seems so doable.
Please submit it to our
You only need 5 colors.
That's all you need. All right. Yep. Send that to us at makeitstoppodcast@gmail.com, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
The Make It Stop podcast is recorded at the Boston Free Radio podcast studio located at Somerville Media Center in Union Square in Somerville. It is produced and edited by Heather McCormick, and the music that we use for our show has been produced by Patrick Ahern. Thanks for listening.
Hey, diggers, this is an announcement. Episode 18 is on the way. We are in the final polish. All the bodywork, sanding, and the paint has been put on this rocket ship, so we just need that final coat to finish. Coming out of the last few episodes of the Rock and Roll Archaeology podcast that concentrated on specific geographies like London, LA, San Francisco, and New York, we are now in the home stretch of our time in the 1960s. And so with this one, it's not about a place on a map, but a year in the life. It's called Episode 18, 1969, and it's a year so big in rock and roll, it'll take 2 episodes to tell the full tale. Part 1 will cover mostly the first half of the year. We'll spend most of our time in the UK checking in with the Beatles as they are beginning to fray internally, while friends and competitors, the Rolling Stones, are about to become the greatest rock and roll band in the world. Of course, the Fab Four are still able to be the Beatles, so therefore they are not going down without a fight. And the Glimmer Twins must make a sacrifice to achieve the greatness of that 68-73 run of peak Stones. Then we go beyond England and America and venture into outer space, where we dissect the moonshot and how it affected society and the arts. So, like the sci-fi that surrounds the very real human endeavor, we will peek into the future ourselves with some rock and rollers that will really take us into the next decade. So hold tight, it won't be long now. It's coming, and we think you will all be pleased. Episode 18, 1969, Part 1. Tell a friend.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frunino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.